We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Farhan Zaidi was on the afternoon show, so a lot to digest there. On the text line, oh, tips from the 707. Google Bald Eagle, third pick down, there's a bone in the bird's beak. Scootable ding. Yeah, text today. Nominee. That's neither here nor there, though.
That's
from the
true.
510. Yeah, it is absolutely true. I think it's absolutely crazy that Gabe Kapler just signed up to be manager of this Giants team, and he's already being scrutinized and talked about as to whether he should be replaced. What other job in America does someone get where they're intensely scrutinized a month into their job?
Great text. So there you go. Jobs. He's getting some support. So we asked, is he getting support? You guys wanted to know, is there fans that support him? Right there. And I happen to be one of those fans that are supporting Cap. So back up. Let's just see what happens. Let's just relax, fellas. Relax.
It's also getting compared to Tom Sula on the text line. I guess you don't want me to read that one, huh, bro?
No, I said he's. I didn't say he wasn't disliked either. I said he just wanted to know.
Yeah. Lowe's getting compared to Tom Sula. Is that what that was? Or Kapler's getting compared to Tom Sula?
I think Kapler, but I do. I probably should double check that. Good point right there.
Yeah. I mean, this is to go out there on a repeat mound visit when you're not allowed to is akin to J.R. Smith going the wrong way with the basketball in game one of the NBA Finals. It is it is absolutely egregious. It's akin to Chris Webber calling timeout when he doesn't have a timeout. It's an absolutely boneheaded move. And when you're the skipper in the 10th inning, now was that make or break to win or lose the game? No, but that is a galling red flag to have a manager in that moment make that level of mistake. It's just something you take and you file away. And if you're afraid to be critical of that, low, then maybe you should push away from the microphone and let somebody who has actual opinion.
What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of?
What are you afraid of?
I'm not trying to just not say anything about it. Yes, was it a mistake? Yes. But how do you know it wasn't intentional? How do you know the guy wasn't trying to buy his pitcher a little bit more time? He seen that he was rattled. I mean, there's all kind of little things. He could have been playing a cat and mouse game. I mean, so you know what? He's just getting him get his head right. So we can look at it all kind of different ways. We can twist it and turn it and twist it to whatever we want him to make it to be. But bottom line is, this guy's got this team playing better than anyone expected. He's got these players believing in one another. He's got the veteran guys thinking that, hey, he's a player's coach. He's got guys that we didn't think that should be playing. He's playing them. And at certain situations last night, you had one of those guys that couldn't hit a ball since Moby Dick was a minnow and put him at the number four hitter, the four hole, and he hits a home run. And you look at what he did on Sunday, a guy that was 0 for 22, you know, 0 for 22 and Hunter Pence, he puts him at number four and he hits a triple. So you look at what's going on, some of the things, moves that he's making. Why don't we praise that, Mr. Dan Dibley? What about this guy? All these guys that we're talking about, they're done. All of a sudden he puts them in those positions and they're coming up solid for us. So you guys need to put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah, you're right. Hall of Fame manager. I stand corrected.
Oh, my God. No, did I say that, Whitey?
Hall of Fame manager. You know what? In all fairness, let's hear from Gabe Kapler. Now, last night, we know the Giants beat the Rockies 4-3 with Brandon Belt. Some are calling him Brandon Nimitz because his OPS right now is 880. I don't know where that started, but it's really catching fire. Really catching fire. But Gabe Kapler made a decision last night. Now, he managed the team in a victory, but he did bring in Tony Watson in a situation where he had to face Nolan Arenado. Arenado hit a home run. Now, you did have some lefties coming up after that. So the Giants won, but Gabe Kapler was asked about that. So here's Gabe Kapler explaining why he had Watson, the lefty, face Arenado, who homered last night.
Yeah, for the most part, and I think that's a fair question. So we know that he's not just going to face Arenado, and I know that Arenado has done damage against Wadi in the past. But given the stretch of left-handed bats that were coming up, and the likelihood that, you know, you're not just going to face three, you might have to face four, you might have to face five. And we have three innings to cover at that point. So we have the seventh, the eighth, and the ninth, and we have three really high-quality leverage arms to go to, Wadi, Gott, and Rogers. In no particular order. So if you think about each one of those relievers having to take down a different portion of the lineup, we felt like that stretch through left was the optimal spot. And then that would give us Rogers and Gott at the top of the lineup. And that's sort of how it played out. We didn't have the best matchup there with Arenado. We knew that, but we really liked the matchups coming up behind him. And we thought we had to make a trade-off somewhere.
Well, it worked out. Yeah, Arenado hit the home run, but the Giants win the game 4-3. I don't know, Dibs, what do you think of his explanation there? What I like about that most of all is he said, you know what, that's a fair question. That's what I appreciate about that answer.
Yeah, that's kind of his MO. If you listen to all of his interviews, he always will start off with, I'm glad you asked me that, or that's a fair question, or I appreciate you bringing that up.
Did he answer, Dibs?
I'm sorry. Yeah, you were saying Dan Dibley about
yes,
the process.
Yes, I was saying.
Yeah.
I was saying, Lo, why don't you take a play off there, kid, and go out and see if you can't mow the lawn or something.
Yeah.
As I was saying, yes, Whitey, you'll notice that he starts off every answer in that way. It's a very, very good technique. It's very disarming. It makes the person who asks the question feel like the answer is being directed at them. And it was a good question, and ultimately, in that spot, you'd like to see Watson show a little bit more of a precaution when you're facing the righty, because you know Watson's brought in to face subsequent lefties. So it's one thing to go after and challenge a guy. Nobody on base, fine. You got a 2-run lead. The worst thing that could happen did happen. But ultimately, with this 3-batter minimum, there's going to be tough matchups that you have that you otherwise wouldn't put your pitcher in a position to face because they have to face three guys.
Yeah, Low on the text line here from the 707. Every question is a fair question or great question to Gabe Gaffler.
I just think that we have to be fair and balanced when the guy says that's a great question and fair question. When he answered, I thought was the answer. Did he answer? I think the fact of the matter is we wanted to know, did he answer it? Now, are you happy with his answer? Yes, no, maybe so. But his answer was, hey, look, I knew that I was going to have to give up something. And Arenado has been going yard. It wasn't a good matchup. But he said the guys after that, it was more favorable for us. So I thought that he did a good job in answering the question, Whitey. So I'm sorry if it offended you for him answering the question. Did you expect more out of that? But he answered, and it was a fair question.
No, I appreciate that he addressed the fact that it was fair. And when I saw that unfold, you know me right now, I'll be honest, I'm looking for things to talk about. Oh, is he going to make another mistake? So I was very interested to see how that would turn out. He gave up the home run, but it worked out. And you saw the lineup with the lefties coming up. So it made sense. Now, as far as the bullpen goes, Gott got the save last night. Man, that guy throws hard. So Kapler, after the Giants win last night, was asked if he has a set closer now in Trevor Gott.
Yeah, I think we have several options in our bullpen, high leverage options where, you know, the most important spots will come up in the game. And I think we're going to stay committed to using them where they match up best. There may come a time, and I'll continue to say this, where it just becomes absolutely clear that one is best for the ninth, one is best for the eighth, and one is best for the seventh. I don't think we're there yet.
Interesting. So they're still going to kind of ham and egg it a little bit, Dibs, as far as that goes.
Yeah, in other words, we don't want anybody thinking they're the closer, so when it comes time to get paid, that they're going to show up and say, hey, excuse me, Mr. Zaidi, I'm your closer, and I'm going to need that closer money. And I think you're going to see this more and more across Major League Baseball, where it's positionless bullpens now. You've got guys who are openers, guys who will maybe will pitch in the seventh, and he mentioned the phrase high leverage situations. And if it happens to be in the seventh, will you see Gott earlier in the game? You might, but right now, if you're Trevor Gott, you're looking at the stat line and you got three saves, so you sure feel like the closer, but neither the manager, and by the way, the manager doesn't want to tip his hand about anything, so he's not just going to come out and say, yeah, he's our closer. I mean, duh, he pitched the ninth inning. Again, he's got three saves. He's trying to always be coy and keep all the strategic advantages close to the vest.
Which is fine. And you just hope that the player, you hope that the players aren't sitting there wondering low. You hope that Gott's not sitting there wondering, well, I close, I got to save him. I still the close. You hope there's some communication going on behind the scenes that we're not privy to.
No, you don't. You want these guys on edge because I want them to compete at a high level.
No.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No,
you
no,
want
no,
a situation.
No,
you,
no,
you,
no.
I don't think.
Spoken
right now,
like a football player.
No.
Hut, hut, hut.
What did he just say? Hut, hut, hut. Yeah, hut, hut, hut. Just like you guys talked about Raheem Mostert, and you said that, oh, yeah, because he says he's going to get the ball 20 times. You want him to speak that way, and you want other guys on the team to say, no, that's not your job. That's my job. So when you're looking at a pitcher, you don't think that guys would like to be closers? You don't think that there's different guys out there to say, get, I want that position. I want to be there in a closing position. You're crazy if you guys don't think that, because that's how guys think. They look
well,
at the
baseball,
situation.
Well, you thrive best when you know your role. And in football, if Raheem Mostert wasn't
but he doesn't
sure
know his role
coming
yet.
Into Sunday, if he was going to play receiver or tight end, am I going to play offense or defense? I don't know. Skip's not telling me. How comfortable would he be then?
That's really stupid.
The pitcher needs to know their role. And
if he's playing core receiver
to any
or
of these
running
pitchers,
back?
And I know you've been inside Johnny Cueto's head, you want to have some idea of what your role is going to be going into a ball game.
You want to have a role, but at the same sense, you have to realize that the skipper is going to keep guys understanding that he wants them to pitch at a high level, that he's going to make sure that guys are ready. This is not conventional baseball. We talk about how baseball is changing. Furhan and Kapler, when they're going out there with the way they do it, they say, hey, guys, you're going to have to be ready because in different situations, we're going to be there. So, yeah, guys do want to know their role. They understand that. But in this situation, you look at Kapler. What has shown you that anyone has a role? So when you think about what he's doing, the way he goes about it, he's trying to see who is going to be that. So he's putting guys in different situations to see how they handle pressure.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we'll go to Kontos Attration on this. George Kontos is going to join us. Bottom of the hour, former Giants reliever. We'll ask him about that. How important is it to a reliever to know his or her role? Also, we'll ask George Kontos about the difficulty for some of these veteran players like Belt, like Crawford, adjusting to a whole new culture. Belt with the home run last night and the Giants win over Colorado. And Brandon Belt was asked after the game if the veterans are feeling any sense of urgency right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a sense of urgency as far as that goes. I mean, I think there's just a sense of urgency because we want to go out there and help, you know, our team win the ball game. Yeah, I don't want to continue just kind of going through the motions out there on the field. So I've been working hard as well as the other guys at trying to get some timing and seeing the ball better. You know, I think they definitely carried us a little bit through these first few games. Now it's time for, you know, the rest of us to step up a little bit and help out.
So Brandon Belt with a couple of hits, including the home run last night. Now, we just heard from Farhan, replayed the interview from yesterday. Where are you, Dibs? I know we talk about it and talk about it, but we have a little more context now with Farhan having addressed on 95.7 The Game. Joey Bart, why he's not here yet, what did you make of his answer?
I think that he told you that he's close, which means he's on his way. And right now he's in Sacramento and he's doing what, glorified slap and tickle or whatever it was that you referred to it as
GGA, glorified grab ass.
Thank you. Glorified grab ass. So I think once he gets his fill, two cheeks worth, he'll be ready to go, and he'll be up here sooner rather than later, because right now you've got a situation. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. Chadwick Trump is your right-hand hitting catcher, and he's showing you he's got some pop. A little guy from Aruba, a couple of homers, so I don't think that you're going to bring Joey Bart up until you're ready to play Joey Bart on the regular. And right now, it's Chadwick Trump's spot, and Joey Bart's going to have to wait his turn.
Yeah, but Lo Neal fans are so impatient. You know, yeah, the team, they won last night, but the fans are clamoring for something to get excited about this year and into the future. And Joey Bart, how about a Bart stop at Oracle? Boop, boop.
Oracle station, Oracle station.
Yeah, I think Joey Bart, boom.
Yeah, I think people are looking forward to seeing Joey Bart because they're just looking at this team and saying, hey, we could get any different spark, a guy that, you know, that's going to hopefully be a fixture in this organization. People are they're excited. You know, Christmas time, you can't wait to go open up your presents. You're like, man, I can't wait to get to see what it is. People can't wait to see what Joey Bart can do on a consistent level. And so they're looking at this team. They understand that where they're at. A lot of fans understand this team is not necessarily a championship team, but they do want to say, what is going to give us a spark? What's going to give us some hope? Who's going to be the next Crawford? Who's going to be the next Posey? Who's going to be that guy that's going to be here for the 10 year that's going to be a fixture in this organization? So people do anticipate that. They are wanting to see a guy like Joey Bart come up. And Farhan did allude to, hey, he's definitely going to be on this club. He's definitely a guy that we're looking at. He's going to be brought up, and he's going to become a fixture in this organization if he does what everyone believes he can do. So people just got to be patient and understand that he is going to be brought up. But I think the question is always going to be out there, when is that happening?
Here's where, yeah, it's a good question here, and Farhan answered it. Here's where I am right now with the whole Farhan Kapler thing. Farhan, I think, has done a really good job. He has restocked the minor league system in ways that, unless you're checking all the time, you don't even know what's going on. But the cupboard was bare when he got here, and he's restocked the minor league system, doing a decent job at the major league level. Perhaps a good job. We don't know yet. So as far as Farhan goes, I think he's done a fine job. Joey Bart, I understand management's position. There's no need to rush him. I know a lot of fans. I was on the afternoon show yesterday. Matt Kolsky feels like, what is the harm in bringing him up? If he doesn't do well, you send him back down. I understand that, but I think the team knows better as far as how Joey Bart's coming along. They want him to play first base, so why bring him up now? There's no reason to rush him. I understand that. But as far as Kapler goes, man, I'm just not sure he's a good manager. We'll see. I'm trying to be open-minded. I still can't get over the gaffe he made last week, but he as far as there are no more mistakes like that, I appreciate the way he answers questions. I still don't understand why he had the infield in and Coors in the first inning. I don't understand that at all. So I'm not high on Kapler. The rest of it, I think, is working out pretty well.
Yeah, and ultimately his job is to manage the roster that is handed to him from Farhan Zaidi, and it's going to be lefties against righties and righties against lefties. It's the platoon approach. So from that standpoint, there's not a ton of pregame management as far as what you're going to do. You're going to look at probably an entire right-hand hitting lineup today. You might have Yaz in there because he's your everyday guy. He's leading the club in homers, and he's actually pretty tough on lefties as well. But aside from that, you're going to have the eight right-handed bats, and you'll probably have Hunter Pence in there. Maybe Darren Ruff gets a spot at DH as well. And then from there, Whitey, that's where the management starts. When you get in the game, and if the Rockies go to their pen, what are his counter moves? How does he use his bullpen? If it's a save situation tonight, does he go with Gott on a day game after a night game? Things like that. And I'm with you, and I'm in the same ballpark as you as far as the gaffe. And it's been a couple of gaffes now that he's made in that nature. So just things to keep an eye on.
Yeah absolutely. Keep an eye on the Giants today. Yeah, go ahead, Lo.
I just to add to it, I just think that he's in a situation that he understands what's in his cupboards. And, if you're going to, make a dish and you you only have a certain amount of things and you like this certain amount of ingredients, but maybe it needs more, whatever, you're going to just use what you have. And so whether it's in a closer role, whether it's a mid reliever, whatever it may be, he's still going to try to plug and play, put guys in that he feels they can give them the best opportunity to win. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's going to be second guess because it's not like he has a cupboard full of a bunch of options that he can put in there to make it what we want, a win, to have a great DH. The Giants don't have that right now. And no matter what he does, who's the answer right now? So it's always going to be second guess because I don't think the talent is there on a consistent basis for him to be able to make the dish with the consistency that the Giant fans are used to seeing.
Yeah.
That's why I think the big key for Gabe Kapler is to avoid those embarrassing gaffes. It's one thing to manage a team that isn't great, and you've got these pieces. You're dealing with players who aren't great right now. Hunter Pence, Pablo Sandoval.
Right.
There's nothing he can do. He's got to make do with the best that he has. However, when you go out there and you make a managerial mistake based on the rules, that's the kind of thing that he can control, and that is the embarrassing gaffe that fans have a hard time forgiving, because you remember, Lowe, a couple seasons ago, Don Mattingly went out to the mound, comes off the field, crossed the line again, and then went back to the dugout. Bochy saw it, called him on it. Mattingly had to take the pitcher out, so not only have we seen these gaffes happen before on the other side? Now to see it happen with your skipper rubs people the wrong way.
Right. Yeah, I think what it was, Dibs, I think Mattingly was on the mound talking to the pitcher, walked off the mound, just strolled off the mound, then thought of something, then went back onto the mound. And then Bochy pointed out, you know, you can't do that, Crotty. And so, to go from, of course, he was managing, I think he was managing San Diego? No, he was managing the Giants. He did that also to Grady Little when he managed San Diego. Yeah. Giants against the Rockies today. The Rockies, you watch the game, the Rockies have behind home plate, they have cardboard cutouts, but they're cardboard cutouts of former Rocky players. Does that mean that teams like the Rockies, they can't sell those seats? You know, at Oracle, you got, and in Oakland, you got cardboard cutouts of fans everywhere. And in Colorado, there's Todd Helton. Is that because they can't sell those seats because nobody cares enough? Nobody wants their cutout behind home plate at a Rockies game?
I don't know. What do you think?
That would be my guess. Yeah, I mean, it speaks to what great fans we have here. I mean, because you know that looking for any way they can to make money.
No, I know, but Colorado, you say that. I was just thinking when you were asking that question, but we had a guest on with Colorado, and he talked about even though the team was down, do you know they had the 10 in the market? They were 10th most in MLB, most watched in fan attendance. Huh. So, and that's for a bad product. So when you ask that, I'm like, wow, if Colorado, something about the fans there, they were 10th most watched in fan far as fan revenue. So this goes to show you that a lot of people do watch and at the games.
Okay. Yeah, I know they're playing outstanding baseball. The 7-inning games, I know we talked about that a little bit Tuesday. To me, that's just not Major League Baseball, but that's what we're stuck with this year when they have doubleheaders. You have 7-inning games. I think Elias came out and said, if anyone throws a no-hitter, a 7-inning no-hitter, we will not recognize it as a no-hitter, and bless them for that. I'm not a fan of the 7-inning games. The 10th-inning rule, starting with a runner at second base, the traditionalist inside me, I'm just repulsed by that. But when I actually watch it, it's kind of interesting, Dibs. There's something about it a little bit of edge on your seat stuff.
Yeah, it cuts you to the chase a little bit faster. But I like the slow, long, inexorable march toward the 15th, the 17th, the 21st inning. And I know in this situation with coronavirus and the truncated schedule, everything's kind of smashed together with fewer off days. You want to avoid that as much as possible. And I'm too stuck on kind of what you're talking about, Whitey, the traditionalist angle of it, where, you know, when we were kids and you played 2-on-2 baseball with your neighbors and you'd get on base and then your friend would get on base and you'd say, okay, imaginary runner on second.
Invisible
runner. You'd go back in and you'd bat. And that's kind of what this is. You start with this invisible runner on second, even though it's an actual runner, he didn't get on base. So then we create this error that we magically throw into the box score. I don't like it, and I never will like it.
So that's a rule you don't want to keep next year. What about the DH in the National League? He's signing off on that for next. It's coming. I don't know if it's coming next year. It's coming. Yeah. I don't like that either, but it's coming.
It is coming next year, actually. I think that was part of the preseason bargaining to get this to happen. And going into yesterday's game, the Giants' designated hitters were batting, I think, 120. And yesterday, Pablo with a couple of knocks. Pablo Sandoval's average approaching his weight now low. He's batting 167, just a few points below his weight.
Yeah, fruit point. Wow, he's got about 100 more to go at least to get to his weight. But I like the DH still, Whitey. I think that it's something that should be, you know, and I think it should stay. Do you really want to see a pitcher go up there and hit? I mean, is it really? I just think that a DH gives a team a better opportunity to manufacture runs, for one. Two, I think it more exciting. People want to see more runs. So I think that's really good. At the second base, runner starting at second in extra innings, I'm not with that one. I'm in the same church as Dibs on that particular notion that's saying, hey, start a guy at second, let him play. You know what? But I have no problems with the DH. I think the other one should go, though. Starting on second, I think that should be out of here.
Well, not to spend a lot of time on, the designated hitter, because it's obviously kind of been argued over and over, chewed up pretty good here. But to me, baseball, if they're trying to make baseball more Well, less boring, right? Let's have the DH in the National League so the game is less boring. But excitement is one thing. But if the game's more interesting, it's not boring either. To me, there's something that's really interesting about the strategy traditionally that we had in the National League, where the pitcher's up. Okay, oh, you don't want to watch a pitcher hit. Sometimes a pitcher gets a hit, which is very exciting. Other times, the manager has to make that decision, and it's not just a matter of making the decision to pinch hit. It's about who you bring in and double switches. I like thinking along with the manager like that. Now, again, I've spent too much time on it as it is because it's going away, but that's my counter to people who say the DH is more exciting. Yeah, but the non-DH, to me, Dibs, it's just more interesting.
Right, but nuance is out in baseball,
yeah,
and that's
you're right.
Partly, you know, the generational change that we've all made here in America is there's just not as much nuance. You don't have young people sitting down and watching a full baseball game. I was telling Lo before a couple weeks ago about how I used to go to the game with my dad and my brother Mike, and you'd keep score. You got a program, you sat down with your pencil, and you kept score. You watched all nine innings, you had your own scorebook that you were keeping. Maybe
right,
you were listening
right
to the game as well, and that's the way you digested baseball. Now, you're not going to find that many people under the age of 40 even who will sit down and watch a complete game. Forget keeping score and all that. Nowadays, people, you're checking in and out. And even if you're watching it, you're probably on your phone. You might have something else on your computer. You've got multiple things going on. So the nuance of baseball is lost, and fans are more interested in launch angle and how far did that one go and how many home runs. I mean, you got Pujols one away from Willie Mays, and yet it's not even really being celebrated widely because home runs are so commonplace now.
On the text line, which happens more, a pitcher getting a hit or an onside kick recovery? Sadly, you know, with the new rules in the NFL, you can't recover. You virtually cannot recover an onside kick anymore. So that would have been a fair question, but it's not anymore. George Contos is coming up bottom of the hour. 888-957-9570. Dibs, can I ask you, you mentioned when you used to go to games, what do you remember the most about the first game you ever went to or the first games you went to? What really stands out in your mind?
It's Candlestick Park and having it be my own playground, because I would go to games when I was probably six, seven, eight years old.
Good kid.
You know, you go with your dad and you go with your brother or whatever, and you watch the first three or four innings, and then, hey, Dad, I'm going to get a malt. And, you know, you get that one, the carnation malts you used to get with the wooden
classic
spoon, and you just hope against hope that damn spoon wouldn't break, because then you'd have to go and try to find your way to get a second spoon. And, you know, sometimes you get that malt and it's so frozen, there's no way the spoon's not breaking. So now you got to wait two innings, and you're at Candlestick, and it's freezing, and you're holding this malt your dad spent probably 2 1/4 on, and you know you're not, hey, Dad, can I get another malt? This one's too frozen. Of course it's frozen. Daniel, it's ice cream. But you get your malt, and then invariably late in the game you get bored. And so I'd go to Candlestick, and I would walk the entire top rim of the stadium.
No.
At the very top rim, they had the numbers low, the odds going one way, the evens going the other. And so, you know, hey, Dad, I'm going to walk the stadium, whatever. All right, son, be back by the eighth inning. And you just
walk
the top rim.
did you not with the malt, Dibs, did you not get the cup and, like, bend it? You know, when it's fro, you know, get the cup and then tap the bottom?
Come on,
Dibs. You know how to – I'm thinking – when you're thinking about that malt, I'm like, man, I remember having those malts, and you just get them, and you bend the cup, and then get your hand and hit the bottom, and have just sometimes the glob just hit you right in the nose and the face, and it's all over you. But
no, because you dig so hard. You dig.
Yes.
You
got
to pry it up, and it flies up out of the cup and hits you right in the face.
Yeah, it's called the malt floop. Yeah,
yes.
I knew a guy in Vallejo, I think his name is Andy Trochet, and he told me that his brother once got kicked out of not a Sharks game, but a Golden Seals game, because he had one of those malts, and he cold cocked the referee. You can imagine, one of those carnation malts, and he flung it down at the referee during a Golden Seals hockey game, and he hit him, and he was escorted from the premises. Yeah,
wow.
I think for me, just remembering, I know this is cliche, but whether it was Oakland way back in the day or Candlestick, and I still get a thrill out of it, that first glimpse you get of the playing field. I was going to say the grass. When I was first going to Candlestick, or early on anyway, it was the artificial turf, so it wasn't grass. But there's still something that gets me when you go to the ball game, that first glimpse of – I'm sorry if that's cliche, but that first glimpse of the playing surface.
Yeah, and it, for me, it was kind of – it all started when you went up that escalator, the old long escalator candlestick. I think it was on the south side. Scary, Lo. You'd have to go to the upper deck. Now, you could walk.
Wow.
You could take the ramp, and it's, you know, about 12 ramps back and forth, crisscross, and the ramp smelled a little bit like the Haight-Ashbury district, so it wasn't always the greatest alternative, but that long escalator just so far up there. And then, like Whitey says, you get to the upper deck, and you walk through that tunnel, and you feel that candlestick blast of cold air, and you're there. It's ball game time.
Well, our next guest not only went to games and covers games, he actually played to them, of course. George Contos is a Giant TV analyst, reliever with the 2012 World Series champions, joining us on 95.7 The Morning Show with Whitey, Lo, and Dibs. George, thank you so much for your time. How do these Giants at 6-7, how do they compare with what you expected to see from them this year?
Good morning, fellas. I think they're definitely a step in the right direction. The one thing that I'd like to see is some of the veterans who have been there, done that, the guys who have all the rings that I played with. I'd like to see them, you know, get a little kick in the butt and get it going, which I know they obviously want to do as well. But from what I've seen so far, things are coming together pretty nicely. The starters, I think, once they get a little bit longer leash and kind of get their footing underneath them, things should kind of be more status quo and what we all kind of expected to see from the Giants team.
Do you think longer leash, though, is a part of the Kapler-Zaidi game plan? Or are we still going to see guys like the Shark and Johnny Cueto still be limited to that five-inning, twice-through-the-order kind of modality?
I sure hope so. I mean, just using last night's game as an example, I know Logan Webb is a rookie, first kind of full season, if you want to call it this, but, you know, he threw 50 strikes out of 68 pitches into the sixth inning, and he got pulled. I would have liked to see him get a little bit more leash right there, get himself some confidence, and that's how big league starters and guys who go and have long careers, that's how they get started. You go out there, you take your lumps, and he was pitching great. The veteran guys, Johnny Cueto, Jeff Samardzija, I'm sure they're gnawing at the bit to be able to stay out there a little bit longer.
Hey, when you're in a situation where you're playing for Farhan and Kapler, the way that they go about business, one day you could be a closer, one day you could be mid reliever. How do you stay ready, and what do you think the philosophy behind that is, that they don't necessarily have a defining role?
Well, playing under the manager in San Francisco that I did, Bruce Bochy, he was obviously very prone to giving guys roles. When you give somebody a role, it gives them confidence to know what part of the game they're going to be getting ready for. When it was the fifth or sixth inning, maybe into the seventh inning, and the phone rang, I knew what part of the game was my inning to get ready. So when Gardy came down to, you know, make his yell, or when the phone rang, everyone whose spot it might be was already up, kind of getting going. Now it's almost like all the ears perk up in the bullpen, other than maybe Trevor Gotts, and who's it going to be right now? Who's it going to be? I think when you establish roles, you give the guys the mental confidence to understand that this is my position, this is what I have to be ready for, this is what I'm going to go in and do that. Otherwise, it gets kind of a little bit confusing as to who's going to do what to be ready for. And when you're expected to be ready in any situation, it just makes it a little bit more difficult to prepare.
Thank you, George Contos. Dibs and I tried to explain that to Lo Neal. You know, he was a football player. He was a great football player, but he was a football player. So thank you for helping us explain how the great game of baseball works. George Contos with us, Giant TV analyst, and, of course, he was a Giants pitcher, also pitched for the Yankees, among other teams. That said, George, as a guy who relieved at the highest level, how impressed were you with the way the bullpen protected that late lead last night in the house of horrors that is Coors Field?
Well, they certainly did a better job than I was always able to do in my career. I think we were talking about it yesterday during the broadcast. I have north of a 10 ERA at Coors Field, and it's just a nightmare place to play. But those guys did a fantastic job. After the first little hiccup they had on games 1 and 2 in L.A., I've been really impressed at how all these guys, one after another, come in. They throw strikes for the most part. They attack hitters. They pass the ball from one on to the other, from one guy to the other guy. And they've been making good things happen. And the bullpen has always been the strength of San Francisco teams. And it's looking like it's becoming a pretty good strength for this one as well.
You mentioned an ERA north of 10. Tyler Rogers sitting well north of there at 13.5. Now, he was victimized by the one bad outing. But how much does that weigh on you when you're going out there? Does it lead you to press knowing that, man, you're kind of behind the eight ball stats-wise?
Ideally, as a reliever, all you want to grade yourself on is execution of pitches and did I move the ball around? Did I come in and throw strikes? But as a competitor, we've always been taught to grade ourselves based on ERA. So it's just kind of one of those things that's hardwired into our brains as pitchers that ERA matters. In such a small sample size, one outing can skew things for a month. So I don't think he should worry about his ERA right now. He keeps going out there putting up zeros and pitching the way he did last night. That'll come down fairly quickly.
You know, when I played ball, you know, guys could run across the middle, and if the guy catch it, if he reaches up for it, safety could hit him. I played fullback. I could run in there and lead with my head. And, you know, and things have changed. I didn't like it because I liked being physical, and I loved being able to have a safety like a Ronnie Lott to come in there and clean your clock and put that fear of God in a receiver coming across the middle. But the things changed, and sometimes it evolves. And not necessarily it's good, bad, or indifferent, but when you're talking about the way that baseball is now, how you're starting to see it changing, guys aren't pitching full games. They're going five innings. They can't go through the rotation more than twice. When you watch the way that Farhan and the way that they're operating, what do you think that does? Has the game changed enough that now the pitchers, they understand that, hey, the roles they may be, one day they're closer, one day they're not. Is that now you think it's uniformly that guys are understanding that's the dynamics of baseball and some organizations, that's just the way they do business?
Yeah. Unfortunately, being a guy who has come up, you know, I came up with the Yankees, which obviously everyone knows is a very old school baseball organization.
Sure.
All the roles were defined. You know, your starters were, you know, Andy Pettit, Roger Clemens when I was there, guys who were expected to go six, seven innings out there and minimize the use of the bullpen. The game's changing as in life, everything evolves and you have to put one foot in front of the other. And when you see some of the guys now who are the studs in the game, the you know, Max Scherzers, DeGroms, when their time sets on the game and the young guys who continue coming up continue buying into this new philosophy that the game is pushing towards, it's totally going to evolve. You know, I was talking about it maybe last year or a couple years ago that you're going to start having maybe one or two guys that are going to be those studs per team, and then everybody else, it'll be a piece together bullpen, starter, a couple innings here, a couple innings there. But the game is totally evolving and adapting, and I think everyone has to get on board. Otherwise, you're just going to be fighting a losing battle, and you're going to be upset about it for no reason.
George Contos with us, used to pitch for the Giants, of course. He's a Giant TV analyst. George, if you would, please take us out to the mound, inside your head. You're facing Nolan Arenado, a guy who's, you know, red hot right now, and he's an outstanding player. How do you approach a guy like that? How are you to try to get him out?
So my approach to right-handed batters, regardless of who it was always the same. I know that coming into this series, Nolan had been in a little bit of a slump, and we've been talking about how he's a Giant killer and how he always does so well against the Giants, 31 career home runs. But the three homers that he's hit, you tip your cap to him. He clipped them, he got them, but he hit three mistakes. And against a guy like that who's a superstar, who's done it at a very high level for as long as he has, you just have to try to avoid making those mistakes because he's not going to miss them. If I was on the mound, I've had success against Nolan. I think he's only 2-for-11 off me with a single and a double. But I would try to face him inside off the plate. When you're watching him hit, he gets a little anxious, and as the pitcher's delivering the ball, he has a little bit of a step up towards home plate. He gets a little jittery, and he gets closer to home plate. So I would throw him a two-seam in on his hands, hopefully that he's not able to get to and pull it. And if he can, he'd pull it foul. But I'd get him out with breaking balls down and away and fastballs or cutters up and away in that little spot that he has. That's a little bit of a hole in his swing.
Wow, good stuff. George Contos, thank you so much, George. We appreciate it. Hopefully we can catch up again real soon. Stay healthy, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys. Great chatting.
Absolutely. It's that easy getting Arenado out. It's that easy. What's coming up is brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. Will Kittle's new deal break the bank? Next, 95.7 Morning Show, Whitey Low and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
And the 95.7 Morning Show, Whitey Low and Dibs. Coach should be back tomorrow. Thanks to George Contos for joining us. Thank you for being with us today.
Thursday.
Giants wrapping up their series with the Rockies, the Red Hot A's scorching right now. How about George Kittle, the George Kittle situation? Yesterday, the 49ers had Raheem Mostert meet with the media and Fred Warner, so they've got the Raheem Mostert situation all settled now. But how about George Kittle? When is that going to get taken care of? This is from Jay Glazer. Quote, he's going to break the bank, and rightfully so. He's someone you don't have to worry about because he has a work ethic. He's not just trying to be famous. He's trying to be great. That's a big thing. Too many of these cats try to be famous instead of being great, not realizing that if you're great, you will be famous. George Kittle could have dominated in any generation or era. That's quite a rare find, end quote. Jay Glazer. When Jay Glazer says he's going to break the bank, what does that mean to you, Lo? What does that mean to you, Dibs?
He's going to break it. I mean, you think about what he's saying. He's saying this is a guy, the tight end market, I think it's $10 million. I think that's the average. Well, that's the highest paid tight end, 10 and some change. George Kittle is going to do something that quarterbacks, you look at Mahomes, you think about he's making 30-some million. He's going to do something that I think he's going to be more significant than that. Of course, it won't be going to be $500 million. I get that. But it's going to surpass all the tight ends. It's going to be, you know, $15 million. He's going to almost make double what they're making. That's a huge jump, 50% more than what any tight end in the league is making. I mean, that says a lot. And he's going to sit there for a while. I think he's going to be at the top of the mountain. The system helps him, the way that he plays in Kyle Shanahan's system, the freedom that it gives him, the way that he blocks, you know, especially out on the perimeter, the things that he brings to the table. His catching ability as a not just a tight end, but as a receiver. He gives you so many different dimensions. He makes this offense go, and he makes this offense perform at a very, very high level. He is definitely going to get paid, and he is going to reset the tight end market. That's not rocket scientists. Everyone knows that, Dibs, right?
Yeah, but break the bank, what does that really mean? I mean, break the bank, he's going to get $20 million a year? No, that's ridiculous. And I think Jay Glazer is speaking in general terms, because nobody really knows where the number is going to land. And now, whether or not George Kittle is looking for $17 million a year and the team is offering 10.7, I think the two sides are much closer than that. But the bigger question, rather than will he break the bank, will he break the team's salary cap? That, to me, is a more interesting question, because if you give George Kittle $15 million a year, if you give him $17 million a year, how much does that hamstring your ability to keep talented players around him? Now, that's not to say that you're going to give him $10.7 million because you want to make him the highest paid, but you don't want to reset the market. He's going to reset the market. It's just how far up do you go when you are resetting it? And I think my number has been $13 million a year on the average annual value. That's, to me, as high as I would go as the 49ers side.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's one thing to reset the market, and that's a given here, but Jay Glazer talking about, quote-unquote, breaking the bank. You'd have to be, what would a figure be that would break the bank? Yeah, you're right, Dibs. I mean, it'd have to be like 17. To me, 15 for someone like Kittle it's reasonable. Now, I don't know. I don't have the cap situation in front of me here, and obviously the 49ers have other concerns than just, gee, Georgie deserves it, but he's got to get at least $15 million, right? He's 15, that good.
Yeah, $15 million. You look at it for the tight end market, that's breaking the bank. I mean, think about there has not been a tight end that's going to make 50% more than what any tight end has made. I mean, he is going to do something that no tight end's done. So that is definitely breaking the bank. And yeah, I do understand when we talk about the cap numbers, and that's why Buckner's no longer here, and because they knew they could not afford him when they had to make sure they was going to take care of Kittle. I look at the situation, Dibs, and you tell me, if you talked about, and I know, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you got to have the quarterback. If you don't have a quarterback, you're not going anywhere. I'm on the other side. I think that you don't necessarily, as long as you have a serviceable quarterback like a Jimmy G, a guy like that, a guy that's, you know, doesn't have to be elite, but just good, a great game manager that can do the things you need him to do, can make the throws he needs to. I think you need a quarterback like that, and you can go far. But you tell me, if you said, but I asked you guys, would you rather, if you had Jimmy G as quarterback or Kittle as a tight end, could you put in other quarterbacks and say that the team has a better chance of winning a Super Bowl with Kittle or better chance with Jimmy G? What say you two? Because me, I think it's Kittle. I think he's that dominant that he means that much to a team that you could have, you don't not to have to say necessarily an elite quarterback because he hides a multitude of faults.
Yeah, it's Kittle, and it's not close. But I think to that end, it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to overpay in order to keep George Kittle here. Because remember, George Kittle is under contract for this season, and you still have the franchise tag that you can use in a subsequent season. So as much as you want to do right by the player, and they showed that with Raheem Mostert, where they gave him a raise ahead of last year and he outperformed his contract, and so they went ahead and gave Raheem Mostert more money. So if you're George Kittle, you know they're going to take care of you. But at what point does taking care of him, quote unquote, hurt your ability to do business down the road? Because you mentioned it, Lowe, you got McGlinchey, you got Fred Warner, you got Nicky Bosa coming up. Yeah. And this is every team, and this is the byproduct of being successful and making good draft picks, that you're going to end up having to pay guys in order to keep them. So that, to me, it makes it so you want to be a little bit cautious in just how much you spend for George Kittle.
You do. You do, Whitey. But at the same sense, when you got a guy that's like this, I mean, who would have thought, who would have thunk that a guy like Khalil Mack was going to leave the Raiders organization? I mean, who would have thought that that would have happened? Yes, and it's like, you know, Dibs, you talk about it all the time. You like saying, okay, if I have a top five or top 10 or whatever pick I may get, I have a lottery ticket in my hand. I have a lottery ticket, but that's all it is a ticket. But is it going to be that $1 billion jackpot? Or is it going to be that $50 jackpot or a $50,000 jackpot? What is it? It can be a high pick. But what is the numbers that it's going to produce after you get it? So even though these high draft picks, what you get for these guys, you don't know what it's going to equate until after the product plays for you. So you can give up whatever for Kittle. He can get a king's ransom, but you still got to hit. Kittle is a proven product. Kittle is a guy in the tight end market that has done something that we haven't seen. He's too fast for linebackers. He's too strong for safeties. He's too physical for other individuals. So you look at him, he can play any position. The Y, he can play the Z, he can play the F, he can move, he can play any slot. You name it, he can do it. He's a tight end. He's a tight end. I know the initial says tight end, Dibs, but he's a receiver. He can play receiver. What can he do? He's a defensive end. He plays everything.
Dibs, you make me nervous when you start talking about franchise tag, because I know that you are financially very responsible and you have an economic intellect that I frankly I don't possess. I'm sure with the glorified garage you're putting together, I mean, I'm sure that you're cutting costs and it's a very efficiently done process. So I understand where you're coming from. But if the 49ers have to cross a line where they got to play, I mentioned this a couple days ago, hardball by going franchise tag on George Kittle, I think then you're limiting what you're going to get from him long term. And I hope it doesn't come to that. And I hope the 49ers decide, I hope they choose breaking the bank over going franchise tag.
I just don't think that they have to play hardball, but I'm just pointing out the reality of the situation, because you and all the rest of the fanboys, all you want to do is just take every single dollar and shovel it George's way. And I don't think that makes prudent business. It's not sensible. And what you should care is what happens when the next guy comes up and it's like, well, you know, DeForest Buckner, we couldn't keep him because he was going to be too expensive. Okay, I get that. You have depth at that position. And I'm sorry, but Jordan Reed is a massive question mark. Ross Dwelly is an overachiever. Garrett Celek, Levine Toilolo, they aren't on the team anymore. And I know you drafted a tight end this year in the draft, but you don't have a replacement. But at the same time, you don't necessarily need to throw this guy $15 million a year. The top tight end makes 10-6. If you give George Kittle 5 years and $65 million, which is 13 per year, and you give him $40 million guaranteed, I can't imagine he says no to that.
Well, if he doesn't, great. But I think you touched on the key there. Tell me if I'm wrong, Lo. You talk about Buckner, as great as he was, they feel that they can, through depth and through bringing in Kinlaw, he can be replaced. Mostert had a great year last year, and obviously they don't want to replace him, but even Breida last year, who's gone, averaged more than 5 yards a carry. But there isn't another Kittle, as you said. You can't bring in another Kittle. You can't, through depth or going out and finding a bargain, you can't get another George Kittle, which to me is why the 49ers over a barrel, they got to break the bank for Kittle if that's what it takes to bring him in, Low.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We're talking about, oh, yeah, but they did right for Mostert, Raheem Mostert. But, yeah, Raheem, come on. They gave him a couple peanuts compared to what Kittle's going to get.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
I know.
He wasn't like it was. So we can't use that analogy. It just shows that they are going to operate in good faith. So, yes, they're going to do what's right for Kittle. But, absolutely, the guy's going to get – it's going to be 5 years. And I would say if you told me to go over under 78, I'm going to say over. I think it's going to be 5 years over $78 million. The guy's going to get
paid. And
it's
really the guaranteed number that's the most important. Right. So you think he's going to get $40 million guaranteed? If I put the over-under it at $40 million guaranteed, where would you stand on that one, Lo?
I would go over. I really would. I think that this guy, you're going to have to, because you can't do a 7 or 8 year deal. Dibs, you're right. Absolutely right, because we just know that the position, the longevity, you just don't know. So he's going to get another contract, but I think it's going to be $40 million guaranteed money. And I think the guy's going to do something like a, you know, a 5 year deal worth about $80 million. That's just, and it's going to reset the tight end market. And then you're going to see guys trying to get more money. But I'm telling you, Kittle is going to set the market. He was number seven on the NFL best players list, number seven. So the guy's going to demand a king's ransom.
That'd be $16 million per year if he gets 5-80, Whitey. That's a lot of matzo balls.
Yeah. That's
a lot of, how much of matzo balls cost these days? I don't know. But if I'm the 49ers and I get this thing done for that, I feel like, whoo, may have dodged a bullet there. Jordan Reed is not being brought in for insurance, right? I mean, he's a nice depth piece, but there's no way Jordan Reed gives the 49ers any comfort over, in case things don't work out with Kittle, we have Jordan Reed. That can't be part of the equation, am I right?
You're right. Jordan Reed's being brought in to be a red zone target and to be an additional threat in the two tight end system. If he stays healthy and he's able to do what Lo was talking about yesterday with his athleticism in the passing game, oh boy, watch out. Can you imagine Debo and Reed and Kittle? You sneak the little fullback out there as well, Lo, if you're going with that that 21 personnel, you go 22, go with the big package and send those big fellas out in the pattern. That's going to be a deadly red zone offense.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, Dibs. If I'm a GM, I know this isn't how it works, but let's say Kittle resets the market at whatever it is for tight ends. And then I'm a GM of another team. And next year, some other tight end comes in and says, I want Kittle money. You're not George Kittle. I'm not giving you anything close. I know the market was reset, but not your market, because you're not like him. Nobody's like George Kittle.
And that's why Mahomes is the one of those guys that just did the same thing. No one's like him, and that's why we're going to see, you know, that's sit at the top of the roof for a while. But yeah, when you're looking at Kittle and you're thinking, okay, what's this guy going to be? Yeah, so it might be to lose a pound on that. So 5 for $75 million, I can actually see that happen. If I was going to bet it, I'd bet that. I would take that 5 for $75, no question. But I think that when you look at Reed, no, Reed's not there to take his spot. And like Dib said, he's not there to replace or surpass Kittle. But at the same sense, you got to realize you needed him. Why did you need Reed right now? Because newsflash, your Debo Samuels, who's brought a lot to the table, he's not going to be playing first opening day. He's not going to be on the team because of the fact of his foot injury. So you do need another weapon. And right now, you're going to be depending on Brandon, a rookie, to make that happen. Receiver you got from Arizona State. I love Herm Edwards. I love Herman. Brandon Ayuk. I love Herman Edwards. What he brought to the table. He was my coach and John Lynch. His coach, and so John understands this guy come from a pro style offense, so that's why they looked at him. So it's a situation, though, still you don't have your number one receiver. Reed's brought in also to help this team move the ball down the field.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. 95.7 Morning Show, Whitey, Lowe, and Dibs. Jay Glazer says that George Kittle is going to break the bank. So we're trying to figure out what exactly that means. And the prudent one, Dan Dibley, you're willing to go how high to get the Kittle situation settled before you go, that's it, George, franchise tag?
I think it's $13 million a year. And, you know, you go from Hunter Henry, who's making 10.6 average annual value, and you go up to 13, and that's 20% higher than any other tight end in history. You give him $40 million of that guaranteed, and you say, George, you're with us. We love you. We want you to stay. But at the same time, we want to be able to keep this team elite. And I think he'll understand that.
on the text line here, 888-957-9570. Which one of these guys are taking a hometown discount? When do the players start to sacrifice for the opportunity to win championships, or do they move off them and move to the next man up and hope they can keep striking gold? Not a player's job to manage the salary cap. Just get paid. Thank you. That's from the 925. Yeah. Now, part of the equation, if it ends up getting to the point where the 49ers go franchise tag, this has to do with something we talked about a couple days ago. You don't know about the shelf life of a guy like Kittle, right? Given his position, how hard he plays, you don't have to worry necessarily, to be frank, about 5 years from now, because he may have played out his usefulness by then, right? So if you go franchise a couple years, that might get it done.
Well, that would mean this year he plays under the final year of his deal, which is about 2.6 or something like that. And then the subsequent year, you would hit him with the franchise tag, which is, I think it's the average of the top five plus a little bit. So at that point, you'd be paying him about $10.5 million. So you'd get him for 2 years, and you'd only pay him, say, $13 million.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.